You started with 3, 2, 1.
I started quick. I'm gonna go. Ah.
I think this. Don't edit any of this. This is just into the podcast. Welcome to Nonprofits. It's May 10th, 2017. My name's Atif.
I'm Robert.
I'm Scott.
You sound so down.
I just have 2 more weeks until I get my pension.
I know.
Too old for this.
We're doing one more podcast next week, and then we're going to take a break of a few weeks. I think we have a sort of older podcast, which is standalone. We may run. Scott and I may do one as well, but Robert is going to be taking a break from the world today, which is taking everything he's got. He needs a break from all his worries, which sure would help a lot. But you're going to an island in Canada at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Little cabin in the woods, essentially, but on a lake.
Just recharge. Recharge your batteries. Get away from the news. Are you actually going to look at the news? Or are you literally just going to sequester yourself?
I used to not look at the news because we didn't have cell phone coverage or internet or, you know, even power sometimes. Mm-hmm. But now it's hard for me to resist. Plus, it's going to be the NBA Finals, and I may have to tune into that.
Obviously, there is big news about something I can't even remember anymore. No, it's Comey, President Trump, firing the head of the FBI for a pretty flimsy given reason. The two that I've seen, I think The Hill reported this today from someone who was close to Comey. One was the investigation was picking up steam. He had asked for more resources from the deputy attorney general, who subsequently wrote a memo saying, hey, we should fire this dude. And apparently also Trump wanted a loyalty oath or some kind of something saying, I am loyal to you, and Comey declined to give.
Completely inappropriate, if that's true.
I also heard that possibly when Comey said that he was mildly nauseous, that his decision to say that they were investigating the Wiener information.
Yeah, that may have affected the election.
Well, yeah, that may have really made Trump angry, that he would have been nauseous that Trump had become president.
But that's not what it even had to mean. Just
that he would have been involved.
He could have voted for Trump for all we know.
Sure, but it should have made him just like joyous that this had happened. So
he is, in fact, Republican, right?
Yeah.
Yes. He was Republican.
Yeah.
But his loyalties are not so clear. I think he probably genuinely is loyal to the FBI as an institution, even though he has maybe failed to do a good job of protecting it.
Yes. A lot of people have stood up to Comey. And the one to me that carried a lot of weight was Barack Obama, who made a genuine effort to have conservatives or Republicans and Democrats in his administration, but who last year said, as this was going down, even though he may have disagreed with what Comey did, he thought Comey was a good man, basically. Someone who was actually trying to do the right thing and trying to be a good FBI agent, which is inconsistent in some ways with the way the Trump administration has been operating, which is, we're not putting technocrats in these positions. We're putting people who are loyal to Trump. And if you're not loyal to Trump, even if you're good at your job, you're going to go. We are much more focused on, are you on Team Trump, as opposed to, are you good at your job? In positions where your loyalty to Trump shouldn't really make a difference.
Can we talk about whether or not there really was cause for firing Comey? I believe that it's a pretext. It's a transparent pretext that the reasons that have been given. And under the current circumstances, when Comey is conducting an investigation of the Trump campaign, this is completely inappropriate. But just taking the Rosenstein letter at face value, is there plausible cause for firing an FBI director?
In my mind, yes.
So the sensible reason was, ironically, arch irony, they disagreed with the way he handled the Hillary Clinton investigation.
Right. They clearly didn't disagree with it at the time.
No, he loved it. They loved it at the time.
They said he didn't go far enough.
Yes. My understanding is very rarely have, even though Trump has the ability to fire.
Is the legal authority.
Right. It has only been done in the past for, I think William Sessions was fired by Bill Clinton.
Correct.
For an ethics violation or some kind of ethics investigation.
And there was no sense that Clinton had a conflict of interest there.
There is. No, there. So in the case of Clinton, it's a little bit different. So he was, I think, technically fired because he was misusing funds. So he was having a fence built around his house by the FBI, which is a secure fence, which he could say he needed for security. He was being, you know, chauffeured by limousine to different places and not paying for that in areas he shouldn't have been doing. But basically, he was a person who was known to have been more ideologically right. So Clinton would have had a desire not to have a sort of a right-wing FBI leader, but the reason he had for getting him out was that he had ethics violations.
It's a much flimsier conflict of interest case.
And at the moment, he wasn't being investigated by Sessions.
Right. We should also point out that even though Trump has the legal authority to do this, FBI directors have 10-year terms, which, if you'll notice, that does not coincide with the duration of the term for a member of the House, for the Senate, presidency, two presidencies, you know, a full term.
Right.
Two full terms, rather. It is a period of time designed to protect the FBI from politics.
I understood that they're supposed to be fired with cause, not just, I don't like the guy.
Right. If you look at the Rosenstein letter, it seems to make a compelling case, which I largely agree with in general abstract terms, that Comey had essentially undermined faith in the FBI by behaving inappropriately and may not have been the right person to continue to lead the FBI. Now, I don't think that that justifies it in this circumstance at this time, but I'm not sure that the overall rationale in the Rosenstein letter is wrong.
This is my response. One, we can say the circumstances suggest that this is all pretext. Like this is
absolutely. It's not 100% even a, agree. It's not even close.
No, it's not even close. Like in law, there are pretexts. Employment law has a lot of this, where someone has to do something, and then you have to offer. You either say, "Yeah, this is a thing," or you offer a pretext or another explanation. That doesn't even necessarily have to be a good one. Then you just sort of move to the next step. So there are pretexts, and then there's what this is, which is basically a Fox News fig leaf. Like the whole point of this fig leaf is someone can go on Fox News to the loyalists and say, in my opinion, and say, this is why they did it. And then people are like, oh, yeah, because on Fox News, as long as you have the fig leaf, you're good. But for any other objective observer, even Republicans in the Senate and Republicans in the House, they look at this and say, this is laughable on its face. Like, this is a risible explanation for this.
But I have a question on this. So I first of all, I don't believe at all that the reason Trump fired him had to do with Hillary Clinton. But I look at it in a sort of a different way and say, as a Democrat, I already thought that he was quite compromised by bringing, I mean, this would definitely not be Trump's issue, but by bringing up Hillary Clinton at the end of the campaign and not bringing up that there was an investigation of Trump at the same time. So in my mind, at that point, he was acting along party lines, not along some sort of other issues. And he stated why he did that. I mean, he gave his whole rationale before.
But it was bad.
But
it wasn't
bad.
A good
exactly,
rationale.
Exactly. And also in the summer, when he basically Clinton was exonerated, but then he still went into basically saying she is bad. It's like that also is something you don't do. It's like basically either somebody.
Not the FBI's role.
Exactly. And so at that point, in my mind, he got into a political role, not a law enforcement role. And right. We're also supposed to have the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. Okay, she wasn't proven guilty, not even enough to get an indictment. So therefore, that's just done and you just close it. So I thought he was coming from a weak point. At the last,
maybe he should have resigned.
Yeah, I think he should have. I think he should have resigned after the one, for sure, after the one in October. But I think the next step was that in his last hearing, which was, I guess, a little over a week ago now, he also seemed to have, I don't know how he managed to do this, but they brought up the issue again of Anthony Weiner, Huma Abedin, these tapes, not tapes, it's the emails. And he seems to have gotten his facts all wrong on that.
To be fair, I get why they had to issue the correction. I think it's to their credit that they issued a letter correcting me. But that was, he was reflecting the language Ted Cruz had used. So Ted Cruz said tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and then he said, well, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, whatever. That to me seems like the kind of thing you do when you have been answering questions for a long time and someone feeds you something. You know, like when you see an interview, if someone is not particularly a good interviewer.
But the problem I have with that, and I don't know that the answer. The problem I have with that is he is very sharp, just like Clapper is very sharp. And sure. they're not making many mistakes like that. It's possible that he did. I mean, he's still human. But it also could fit into this pattern that for him to inflate what happened there would look better on him. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, there was this huge issue. We had massive amount of data. It could have been really, really bad. And it just happened to not quite be bad. You know, and so sort of expanding that was like a good defense for why he did make the statement. And the statement in October, and it could have just been a slip. I don't know. But because that was also happening in the context of him already having made a comment in the summer, having made the thing in October, it's like there's already enough sort of fog in the air to go, I'm not sure when it's coming from this guy.
I get it.
It's a bad slip, but correcting it was the right thing to do.
Right. Yes.
Slips will happen.
And I'm quite positive that's not the reason he was fired. I'm quite positive that Trump was like, okay, I want this guy gone. Give me a reason.
Well, there's a report that is what happened. That he said a week ago, give me a reason to
fire
him.
For Occam's razor, it's like, that makes sense. That's the most most plausible.
What is Rod Rosenstein doing? I mean, what is his game? He has a reputation for being fair and not a political animal. What Is he completely compromised? Is there any way to defend this?
One of the things I think about is he was, what was he, 10 days or 2 weeks into his job when he wrote the paper?
2 weeks, and yeah.
If you're given the, okay, I'm not a lawyer. We only have one on this show.
Right, Atif is a law wizard.
But Atif is actually a real lawyer. but I've also been a political advisor. And I know that's not supposed to be his job. But if I was given the job to say, okay, give me a case for why this person should go, you know, I could write that. I mean, even as a non-lawyer, I could say, okay, here's the reasons why Comey should go. So you want a legal reason. Here are the issues, or maybe not even legal, but here are the reasons that you could have. And say, okay, that's what he gave. He gave the reasons for why he could go. He didn't give the counter arguments. He didn't set the timing. You know, it's like if somebody gave him the order, you know, please write us what would be a legal judgment for why he should go. Here, I did it. Now, should he go in the middle?
He knew he was providing a pretext sure. for an apparently political
firing.
So what's
he supposed to do when a boss, because so sort of Sally Yates got into this in her testimony. It's like, where does a person stand up and say, I'm not going to do that? You know, if you're told to do something and you don't, you're insubordinate. So if you're told, okay, write me the rationale for why this person should go. Okay, I do. Or I don't. And I'm gone because I'm insubordinate. And he wasn't writing lies.
He's made a calculation that working with the Trump administration is better for some reason than resigning. And I'm not sure that's wrong necessarily. But it seems to me that now, having done Trump's bidding on this, he's so compromised, he yes. can't be trusted to conduct an investigation. I'm hoping his game, but I don't know. I'm hoping his game is to appoint a special prosecutor. Because at this point, that is the only thing that he can do, I think, to save his own credibility and that of the Justice
Special
Department.
Counsel.
Special counsel. That's right.
I also heard something, and I may be off on this, but I heard something that I haven't heard reported at all in the news, and I don't know if I've gotten way off on the conspiracy theory tree. But during the testimony of Sally Yates and Clapper, so Sally Yates, the former acting attorney general, and Clapper, the former head of director of national intelligence, they were asking, I think it was Clapper was saying that they were investigating both something, with the unmasking, somebody from connections with the White House and somebody from Congress, but then he mentioned it was one person. And that was very critical to me because I only know one person who was on the Trump campaign who was also in Congress, which is Sessions. I don't know anybody else that fits that bill. And so if they were unmasking and that unmasking was about Sessions, who's the attorney general, who's Rosenstein's boss, and I know that Sessions is supposed to be recused from all of this, but it's still the boss. So that's pretty awkward. That to me is really, really relevant. And I haven't heard anything. I've never heard anybody else make that connection, and that one just seems obvious. So I don't know why that's not being brought up, or have I missed something?
I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. One of the people who was unmasked was a member of Congress and on the Trump campaign.
So Jeff Sessions was one of the people who was unmasked.
Yeah, that's the only person that's the only person that I can figure that would fit that bill.
Well, yeah, and as you pointed out, he is supposed to be recused from the Russian investigation, even though he appears to have been part of, at least by the reports.
I don't think that's just the reports. I think they're openly saying that he recommended the firing of the person whose investigation he was recused from.
Right. And that's actually relevant because Clapper was saying this is the only person that's been unmasked. And the Republicans have been making this giant deal about, you know, oh, forget about Russia, whatever. The whole thing we're concerned about is leaks, unmasking this, you know, this whole process. And all of this is going down to one person. And that one person appears to be the attorney general. I would say that's pretty relevant.
This gets back to your original question, Robert, which I think is a good one. Leaving aside what we think is not just us, but I think most people think is the actual reason for this, which is the fact that the investigation was accelerating, were there other grounds, reasonable grounds to fire Comey? I say no, recognizing that the legal authority existed, and I'll say why. One, and then this will sort of get into a larger point I want to make, kind of black swan, because we were originally, dear listener, going to pit some black swans, and then this thing happened, and now we're just all obsessed with this. But this actually ties in with a black swan I wanted to discuss. So certainly the authority was there, but there was this tradition that the FBI is supposed to be insulated from politics. And it's something that you only do under certain circumstances. You know, there's an ethics problem, something else. A real reason, because as you pointed out, I don't think that it's at-will employment. I don't know what the standard is for terminating this person. My concern is, even though everyone agrees what he did during the summer was not great, that whatever standard this sets is a much weaker standard than the standard that had existed before. And it's an erosion of norms, just as we've seen in every other aspect of government in the last, particularly the last 2 years, with the Supreme Court, with the nuclear option for Supreme Court nominees. I actually am one of those people who tends to think, notwithstanding everything everyone has said, the legislative filibuster may be next, and we may see it removed sooner than we think. There's a policy in the Senate where that's the blue slip policy, where nominees, the senator from a state that a nominee comes from, can essentially kind of nix that nominee. I think there was a story today or yesterday where Senator Cotton was like, yeah, we're probably not going to do that. Like, that's not a thing anymore. We're seeing that difference between what you can do and what you should do being compressed. And now it's just sort of becoming what you can do. Like, it's like there's a difference between process and outcome. And government is all about process, and business is all about outcome. And those people who have been pushing, let's run government like a business, are essentially compressing. To my mind, it seems very much as if we're moving towards, we care about outcomes. And if there's a process that's getting in the way, and we can blast past that process, let's blast past the process. So my concern with getting rid of Comey is now this is a much weaker standard, right? If you are the FBI director and you're engaged in a high-profile investigation, particularly a political investigation, you're going to make enemies. You're going to do something where someone's going to criticize that. Invariably, there will be one mistake. If your standard is you've made a mistake on a high-profile investigation, and then you just say people have lost confidence in you, even though there are a lot of reports that FBI had a lot of people who were loyal to them in the FBI who were distraught at what happened. Everyone was surprised. I think one of the reports I saw was he thought it was a joke. Like someone, they saw it on TV and he thought that it was a joke. And then someone said, no, President Trump has actually fired you.
Because it was so surprising.
Yes. If the standard is you made a mistake, you made a high profile mistake, and we've lost confidence in you. If you are the director of the FBI, that means that essentially any high profile political investigation you do could result in your firing. Right? Like just for that reason. To me, the standard has to be higher. And even though Trump has the ability to do it, we talked about this in a prior podcast. I'm waiting for the time when Trump discovers his pardon power. And what is he going to do with it?
Stop telling him about it.
I know, exactly.
We'll edit it out.
That's another one. That is only self-restraint, right? Like, I don't know what the limit is. Could he actually pardon everyone in New York? Could he pardon everyone named Trump? I don't know. My understanding is that's not a power with a lot of limits, except political limits, or your own kind of like, you know, self-checking.
If you had a person who had gone totally insane, could they issue a blanket pardon to everybody in the federal prison system? Next moment they would be out, but it'd be already signed. You know, what would happen legally?
Let's walk down this road.
Because that would be a black swan for sure.
Yes. Well, yeah, you're right. That's a black swan. He pardons everyone in federal prison. How long would it take for him to be impeached? I could say over under.
Hopefully it'd take about an hour for his cabinet to get together and just say, okay, this is, you know, the guy's gone. I mean, no matter who.
I don't know. I really don't know.
At that stage, the general public, I mean, as in 95-98% of the general public would be like, this guy's totally nuts out of his mind. And fortunately in our system, if you get rid of the president, the vice president is from the same party. So it's not like, okay, we're going to lose power. But it's like, yeah. Right. So because of that, I mean, if it was like, okay, it's going to switch over to the Democrats, I would have a lower percentage. But no, I think that would be a step too far if he said, just I'm letting everybody out. I've just gone around the bend.
So let's take it down a little bit. Let's say everyone in prison, I have no idea what the set consists of. But let's just say there's at least one person in prison, federal prison, who had business dealings with Trump. And let's say Trump said, I'm going to pardon all these people. I've met them all. I think they're all good people. They serve the time. And we have no idea. Like some of them maybe served 1 month. Some of them served 10 years. Let's say he issued that pardon. Do you think he would be removed from power?
No.
I don't either.
I mean, it depends on how broad it was. But presidents do something that looks like this a lot, particularly at the end of their terms. Maybe they have good justification for it. Clinton got some flack for, I forget who he pardoned right at the end, who he had some business dealings with. I guess it'd be a matter of degree. And I think if it is anything but a matter of enormous degree, he probably gets away with it.
It would have to be really a mass pardoning before it'd be okay.
Or something really egregious. Like if he's like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. It's a serial killer.
Yeah, he's got a good heart.
Yeah.
He probably would have stopped the Civil War.
Yeah, he has four or five good hearts that he keeps in a freezer somewhere. Thanks for bringing up Jeffrey Dahmer, by the way.
Sure. That's what I'm here for.
So anyway, one of the things, a lot of stuff I think has stood out over the past day. God, everything feels like it took a different amount of time.
We have to have our annual 5-year statement, or not our annual, our weekly 5-year statement.
A weekly statement. Yeah, it's like, this. What time is this?
I find it very annoying because I have other things I want to do with my life, but I can't go on with my life when this stuff is going on.
I know. I was reading a study because I had this question about how effective is advertising. Because I remember sort of vaguely reading some studies that said, yeah, actually political advertising isn't particularly effective, or the benefits are fleeting, whatever. But there's a study out of Northwestern from 2016, and their methodology was actually really interesting. They looked at, if I read it correctly, these districts. They looked at districts in a state that are next to each other, but in different media markets. And their conclusions were that advertising isn't really good at getting out the vote, but it's actually really good at partisanship, like making someone more likely to vote Democrat or Republican. And they actually thought maybe one of the reasons why they don't see a get out the vote change is because there's fairly equal suppression between more motivated Republicans and less motivated Democrats. People get engaged by politics and people get engaged by advertising, and it's hard to tune it out, especially with this kind of flamboyantly wild presidency that we're
Well, you
in.
Know what it is? It's a reality show, or it's wrestling. It's like Keeping Up with the Kushners. And
yes.
To some extent, I think that reflects the chaos and the incompetence of the Trump administration. But to some extent, that's by design, that we are paying attention to the circus of their administration, and that distracts from the day to day.
Well, actually, when you just mentioned Keeping Up with the Kushners, the Kushner's sister was in China basically saying, what's a fact?
Right, this should be
a
scandal.
You can pay $500,000 into an investment. You get a visa.
And they implied that Kushner and Trump, that Jared and Trump could help get those visas for them.
They had pictures of Trump. And if you're going to invest.
Yeah, and the reality is you don't need the Trump connections for that. Basically, if you make a $500,000 investment, you already pretty much can get the visa, I think, if there aren't extreme circumstances. But yeah, the way they pitched it is bad. And that should be the story of the week. And it's not. That's nothing. That's a non-story.
So this is a black swan I want to discuss. An expected response. It's sad that it was expected, but it was Mitch McConnell coming out and saying, yeah, there's not going to be. So the special prosecutor statute expired. I think after the Clinton administration, people were like, yeah, we're sick of this. We don't want part of this. But there's a special counsel that can be appointed, but that special counsel is answerable to the attorney general. So it's unclear how independent, given this apparently very partisan Justice Department, would be with the special counsels. It's unclear how independent they would be. So now there's sort of this question that some senators are having of, what are we going to do? Like, what independent group, investigatory group that also actually has some kind of power to do something instead of just issuing a report, can we do? Can we create? And Mitch McConnell came out and said today, yeah, we're not going to do any of that. We have a Senate investigation. We're going to kind of let that ride and see what happens. And we already see partisans falling into place. We already see people on Fox News. We're saying the sort of the twin arguments of Democrats should be happy because they hated Jim Comey, because apparently you can't dislike one thing and then also dislike another thing. And there are a lot of partisan people who are just saying, yeah, this, nothing to see here. There's no evidence anyway, leaving aside the fact that the whole point of the investigation is to build up evidence. So my question to you guys is, there's a sense among Democrats that I think Politico had a story, or maybe it was the Washington Post, that said, Is a wave going to become a tsunami? Is the firing of Comey going to lead to, in this next election, something massive, a massive Democratic change? So my question is, or my, I guess my concern is, what we're seeing right now, at least to me, is people blowing through norms. Government is a lot of rules. There's always tension between people who want to do stuff and people who sort of want to do stuff within the rules and support the rules. And it's just part of government. How do we do stuff within the context of rules? When do we bend a rule? But generally speaking, there's been this effort to keep the rules in place. And now we're just seeing people saying, okay, like, if this is something I could do, I can do it. If I don't have to do it, I'm not going to do it. Do we have to get a supermajority? No. Okay, we're going to go with a simple majority. Do we have to recognize a blue slip rule? No. Okay, we're probably not going to recognize a blue slip rule. We have Jeff Sessions in the Justice Department. We have an election coming up in 2 years. We had some voter suppression during the last election. I saw a study recently that said in Wisconsin, an estimated 200,000 votes were suppressed, pro-Hillary votes were suppressed. I didn't read the underlying study, but that was just the kind of headline.
Can you briefly describe how you think those were suppressed? Because I believe it's true, but what was the mechanism for suppressing them?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I know that there. I know the sort of
because like I know there are things like what form of ID you need if you've moved recently. There's a lot of different technicalities that can make it hard.
Suppressed, they mostly mean discouraging people from voting who might have otherwise voted. So it's always hard to say what the effect of those things are, but it's certainly not implausible that swung Wisconsin.
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways people, I mean, you know, one is a lot of times for especially majority black regions, they will tend to vote through church. So people will get together and then they'll just sort of bus after church and go for like early voting and stuff like that. So there are these sort of targeted ways to discourage mechanisms of voting.
Yeah, that kill early voting on Sundays.
Yes, that are used by particular groups. But in terms of Wisconsin specifically, I'm not sure what that looked like. But more generally, the Justice Department is one of the organs of government that really monitors this, looks out for this. So we have a situation now where there's kind of these vertical monopolies for Republicans in a lot of states. And we have a critical election coming up. My question is, could we see real voter suppression? Not like, not this at the margins, like we know it had an effect, but it sucked. But real voter suppression, stuff where it would be scandalous, but we don't have a Justice Department that's interested. And we have members of Congress who seem to be willing. I mean, Congress is taking votes now that are 70%, 80% unpopular in polling. And they seem to be there seems to be a big difference between who the base is and who their vote is. And there's this thinking on the left that, oh, we may like there'll be this blue wave. I really am wondering whether or not we're going to see third world level voter suppression in this next election.
2018.
Like real stuff, like laws that are transparently suppressing to a very large, like to, you know, tens of thousands of people may be restricted from voting. So like I would say an order of magnitude.
So I mean, I seriously want an example, because one of the things that I've heard as voter suppression is requiring IDs. And even though I don't want voter suppression at all, I'm thinking, why is it so hard for somebody to simply have an ID? And I even should think like, okay, even if I move from one state to another and I don't have a new driver's license yet or whatever, maybe they should even accept my driver's license from another state, and after the election, they can sort it out. But
you would think that it was easy for everyone to get an ID. It's kind of a white privilege question, though, because it's actually not easy in many places for people who are poor or of color to get IDs. They have to go long distances. There are all sorts of, they don't have the documentation. They've never had the documentation. Right. So it's not as easy as it would
be for
you. And,
but I also know that this is one of those things that, like, if a state was saying, yeah, we require a photo ID, a state issued photo ID, that seems like something that the vast majority of the people on the surface of that would be like, well, what's the problem with that? I don't want somebody coming in just pretending to be whoever. So I think if like a law like that passes, that may not cause an outcry, because most of us.
Right. No, it's not facially unreasonable.
It's not. Although that is, I think, one mechanism that we'll probably see. Every election, we see those sorts of things. I wonder if we might not see, like, we have seen people removed from voter rolls tend to be Democrats. And sometimes there are many, many. There's a story last year about, I think, 100-something thousand Democrats removed for some voter roll in New York or something. For these sort of technicalities, or it's not even clear exactly what exactly happened. So people show up to vote, they're not on the roll, and they have to go through this process. I guess my question is, could we see that to a level we haven't seen before? And by a level we haven't seen before, I mean aggressive. Lots of people have been purged from voter rolls.
To the point where, like, if an election was being won by 1 or 2%, you could look at it and say that that number would have exceeded.
Yes. Like making it difficult to vote by saying, like, closing certain locations, voting locations.
I can give an example of something that happened. So this is my advantage of being on the outside. In the last election where we had a president elected, there were two rounds. And in the first round where they try to get, if nobody exceeds 50%, then they do a second round. In the first round, there was massive, massive suppression of the international voters. So we have, I don't know, I'd say probably between 10 and 20% of the population lives outside of the country. And when those people went to go vote at the embassies didn't have enough, they didn't have enough booths. So it's, you know, it's like people were waiting in line literally like 8 or 10 hours, and then they would close. There weren't enough ballots, you know, so a lot of things like this that were just really obvious. It made it literally impossible to vote. And fortunately, because there were two rounds, that became really a very known subject that drove more people to the polls. There were still problems, but does a judge decide to keep a polling station open for 2 more hours? You know, if there aren't enough ballots there, if you don't have enough people manning the stations, you can get it to the point where people are like, I don't have time to wait here all day. And yet you could say, you know, no, we weren't trying to suppress any certain person. So that's something that can be done. You know, I mean, if somebody wants to suppress, that's a way to do it without officially saying, you know, yeah, we're doing literacy tests. Yeah.
There has been a discussion in the United States for a while about making it a holiday, a national holiday.
It's a holiday in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's smart.
in Australia, you have you're required to vote. It's illegal not to vote.
Everyone could be registered when they're born, essentially, or when they turn 18. It's not hard in our technological society. I think this will absolutely be a battleground. It already is. I mean, see what's going on in North Carolina. Some stuff has been really, really brazen. But I think it'll be a battleground in the sense that Democrats will push back. They are very activated. They are aware of this issue. I also think that that's one area where the courts will actually restrain some of the worst abuses. Courts haven't always done it, but they are. And I even think the Supreme Court will. I think that Roberts is not, for all that he's a heck of a lot more conservative than I am, he's not a stooge. He doesn't really want to undermine democracy, and he doesn't want the authority of the Supreme Court to be trashed. He's an institutionalist, and I think that he will probably side on some voting rights cases. If there's something egregious, he will side with the Democrats or with on the side of allowing people to vote, ultimately.
Do you think the Supreme Court will set a standard for gerrymandering?
They've got a couple cases coming up. I don't know what Justice Gorsuch feels about this, but they're going to have to make some decisions. And I think there's a good chance, because I think they have better, more plausible mathematical tools for saying whether or not it's fair.
Well, we know they exist.
We know they exist. It seems facially unfair. Never mind that there's a paper trail saying, hey, we're trying to prevent black people from getting too
leaving
many.
Aside the evidence.
Leaving aside the public statements. I mean, I don't know, back to a conservative Supreme Court justice, but I almost don't see how you can avoid some kind of standard that is better than what we have.
I don't know. That thinking, I have the same thinking, where I think to myself, if I were on the Supreme Court, I would see this case and say, yes, we need something. Because we are undermining people's confidence in democracy. And I agree with you. I think Roberts, who is very conservative, also is someone who wants to preserve, who recognizes that a lot of institutions are created by our thoughts. They're created by our own beliefs. The Supreme Court is, they're not like businesses, which are just people in contracts. People have to buy into these institutions for them to be real. And he recognizes that. And he recognizes the value, I think, of rules in a way that Trump clearly does not.
And he knows that if you tilt the playing field one way, it can also be tilted the other way.
Okay, so if he knows that, why doesn't Congress and the executive branch? Because what we're seeing in the Senate and obviously with the presidency is people blowing past the rules that have existed to protect both sides.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think to some extent it has to do with a shorter time horizon. People in Congress are just thinking about getting reelected. They're not necessarily thinking about the long-term future of their party. And I don't think Trump cares about the long-term future of his party. I think he cares. He's not a Republican. He's a Trumpian. I mean, I think there are people like McConnell who have a longer perspective, but they're torn. The party, it's like a battleship. It's heading in one very partisan direction. I think part of it is that Republicans are primarily determined by the winners of primaries and not by the general election.
And power is addictive.
Well, I think there's a lot of money. Like, a lot of politicians to me seem like kids of helicopter parents. And the moneyed interests are helicopter parents. And they are doing things they don't want to do. We saw all the quotes with this healthcare vote with people saying, like, this is a bad bill. I don't want to vote in this bill, but I felt like I needed to vote in this bill. You know, save us, Super Senate. They're taking votes they know are dumb because their helicopter parent interests saying, hey, you need to do this.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but they have some helicopter parents like the AARP and AMA who are saying the opposite thing. Even Big Pharma is not necessarily saying vote on the repealing Obamacare. So I think the pressure is not just lobbies for them because they're thumbing their nose at some big lobbies.
Right. But the question is, in the primary, who is going to be more involved in the lobby, the Koch brothers or AARP? AARP is going to run some general ad saying, hey, elderly people, this is bad for you. But the Koch brothers are going to, and not the Koch brothers, there are obviously other interest groups that are, the NRA is one, but there are a lot that will get involved early. And will primary you if you vote against their interests. I think those are, like, I guess, so the way I've been reading things, it seems to me that there is this, and Scott, you're exactly right, power is addictive. I think there's the sense for a lot of these politicians that they're ineffective if they're out of power. This is the point that Rahm Emanuel made. Like, you can be as loyal to ideals as you want, but it doesn't matter if you're not in power. You need to win elections. I think they have this thought, we need to win elections. It's the most important thing is, if you want to do anything, is to actually be in power to win an election. And they are willing to do things that I think they would not have been, politicians were not willing to do 20 years ago to remain in power.
I think that the issue of the 100 days had some effect not only on Trump, but also on Congress, because basically almost nothing was getting passed. And I think to look like they had been voted into power and they accomplished zero is something you can't really go back to your voters and say, hey, you know, good job, guys, you voted for me and I didn't get anything done. And so at least saying, yeah, we tried, we passed the bill. Yeah, it had problems, but normally those will get, you know, corrected because it goes through more committees. It'll, you know, Senate will work with it. At least we can say, yeah, we tried to move forward a bit on this. We're not totally impotent, because I don't think you don't want to appear that way as a politician, probably as anybody.
I agree. I think this pressure is coming from the party top down in some sense to look busy, to pass Paul Ryan's priorities, and to some extent to stay committed to the idea that they hate Obamacare after all the years. But I think the people know they could lose power.
Sure, they know they could lose power, but imagine if you go back to your base and your base actually is conservative and wants Obamacare to go, and you go back there and say, yeah, we can't even get something to a vote. You know, we control the House and the Senate and the presidency, and we can't even get something to a vote. We can't even, within our own party, that doesn't work. And that's not just a top-down message. I mean, they're going to go to have town hall meetings where people are going to yell at them for getting rid of their health care, but they're also going to have people saying, we voted for you to do, you know, to move on Obamacare and you're not. So I think it's not only, I don't think we can blame everything on Koch brothers. I don't think we can blame everything on the top-down leadership. So I think it is both. Now, I think
they're in a no-win scenario.
Sure. I agree. And I think that one of their, you know, in a way, their best hope is that nothing actually ever happens before 2018, but it appears like they tried to make something happen. So if Senate sort of kills something, they can say, yeah, we tried. Or even if it passes, but they say we're going to implement this in 2019, nobody will have lost healthcare yet. I think what would motivate people is if they actually see a change to their own life. And I don't think changing arcane laws affects most people. I mean, we may be institutionalists, probably all three of us look at it and say, this is part of what makes our government good, our country good. But I doubt that that's moving a lot of the electorate.
Let's also acknowledge Republicans, many Republicans have a commitment to the institutions. They do actually genuinely believe it. They're not just, you know, completely creatures of their self-interest.
So I'm not talking about party here. At this point, I'm talking about sort of elites versus non-elites. So most people do not spend their lives obsessing about politics, either, I mean, about structure of politics, about formations of governments, about constitutions, other than I want to have my guns or I want to have my free speech. You know, I could say guns if we're concerned. I mean, obviously, I'm making oversimplification, but liberals want, you know, want freedom, free speech, whatever. Let's say conservatives want guns, if I want to make a really simple analogy. But I think that most people don't get into the minutiae. I really don't think that on either party.
No, you're right.
And so at this point, we're talking about the sort of the elites, the people who have the time to study this, who care about it. And that's not the vast majority of voters. You're not going to win the elections based on, you know, based on super majorities, based on whatever. It's going to be, you know, visceral things that people can, they can grab.
I saw an interesting analysis of Trump that basically said, you're going to look in vain to find a real ideology for Trump. He has some impulses. He doesn't have an ideology, probably because he doesn't understand ideology. He has no idea what it means to be libertarian. He's not consistent with anything, but he succeeds because he is a low information voter. He can talk to the average or, you know, the person who lives their life and barely pays attention to politics because that's him. He has the same understanding. So his bizarre, incoherent, make no sense impulses, they sound right to people who aren't paying a lot of attention.
Yes, I think that's right.
I'm actually longing for the days of George W. Bush, which is scary.
No, I know. We're misremembering.
I don't like, but I mean, just the idea that I think he did have an ideology, but I think that he had also an ability to speak in a very simple way. Which I think, when I say it's an ability, I think it's just the way he speaks. I don't think he was, it's not like Obama, who was maybe intellectual and trying to find a way to connect to the average person. But I think basically George W. Bush was in a way a simple guy.
He was. For someone who owned a baseball team, he was a relatively simple guy.
Yeah, but he had an ideology, and so that did drive him. So you could pretty well predict, you know, whether it's his or the people around him, okay, there's some driving force behind him, and it's not just make money for the family.
But it's, you know, it's funny. I reread, there's a great interview, and I encourage any listener to go check it out, of Chris Rock and Frank Rich. I think it's a few years ago. But he was talking about the Obama administration. He was talking about George W. Bush. And he said George Bush ran the country like a cable network. Like, he only cared about his viewers. And Barack Obama tried to be a general network, like a CBS or NBC. He tried to appeal to a broad swath of viewers, and it didn't work. It was, he learned late that there are certain people who was just not going to pull to his side. So I don't want to miss over romanticize George W. Bush, which is a word he coined, But it's not, but it could be.
Like, could be.
But it sounds like it could be.
I don't think he sounds romanticized very much.
No, I don't think so either. Unless you think it's some kind of exercise he and Condoleezza do, running to the hill together.
Well.
I know. I saw her on the news the other day. I was like, couple. You know what? Yeah, they were a cute couple. The love was not meant to be. Do you think, what's the over-under on them saying another time, another place, another life?
I have no comment on this.
I know, but we know it's true. So my question to you guys is, how do you see this playing out in the next year? Where are we in a year?
Look, a year, I mean, normally we talk about, like, super forecasters are supposed to be plausibly good at predicting stuff maybe 18 months to 2 years in advance, max. But a year in this time, I feel like that's like, it's like dog years. It's like 7 years. It's like predicting what's going to happen in 2024.
Yes.
But I don't think that this Comey thing is the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't think this in itself is a turning point. And I don't think we're going to, as you say, we're not likely to get an independent counsel because Republicans would have to defect to support it, and then it'd have to pass a veto. We could maybe get a special prosecutor from the Department of Justice, but I think there's going to be a drip, drip, drip. I think that the cover-up is actually fanning the flames of this fire. There's going to be more stuff coming out. We heard there are, unless he really just shuts down the investigation, you've got subpoenas going out, grand jury subpoenas going out reportedly to Flynn Associates. Reporters are on this all the time. It's just going to keep coming. And I think there's no way that this doesn't eventually, I don't know what's underneath all of this, but there's something, at least marginal impropriety. And I think that the cover-up suggests that some people think it's bigger than that. And I think it's going to keep coming. And I don't know how it ends, but there are going to be Klieg lights, I think, in 6 months.
I think that it actually was important that Comey was fired because essentially my understanding is that the FBI has the ability to either allocate a lot of resources or very little, a very small number of resources to the investigation. And if they, but I mean, not only the FBI, because it's also Treasury. So that like there's potentially looking into whether there was, whether Trump casinos were being used for laundering money from Russians. I mean, there's a lot of other issues. But if you get a new director in that is very, very partisan and is basically just trying to kill this, they could basically just try to, you know, just to underfund it. And I think it would still probably, you know, go on some. But so I'm going to be really curious about who he picks as the next FBI director and how that moves forward.
But all eyes are on this. I don't know if they can sneak this by. I think that he has drawn attention to it.
I disagree. I think there'd still be...
They pick Sessions. They pick Sessions for Attorney General.
I think they could push. They could still push a very partisan FBI director through this Congress.
You think that Jeff Flake and Lindsey Graham and those people who are on the fence right now.
Oh, no, yes. But Lindsey Graham came out in favor of the Comey firing.
That's true. Lindsey Graham was more.
These guys fall in line, man. Like, they fall in line. I think that they
I think McCain was about the only one I saw who was really strong on this.
Yeah. McCain's the only dude who's like, look, this needs to be real. Yeah, no, I'm very skeptical that this is going to turn into that people are going to turn the party. Like I said, I think there's so much energy behind the Republicans in power accomplishing their agenda, an agenda that is unpopular with their voters, unpopular with most voters.
Look at their entire administration. So if you think that he can't pick an extremist, look at, seriously, his whole administration.
Oh, I absolutely think he can. I just think, though, I think that when this happened, everyone in Congress was looking around saying, okay, this is surprising, this is crazy, but how crazy is it? People weren't rushing to full-throated defense of Trump. They were feeling the wind. And I think that it's possible that if the public pressure keeps up on this, that they decide the wind is not blowing with Trump. And I also think that some people in Congress wouldn't mind if Trump were eventually replaced. They are keeping a list of things if they need to replace Trump and go to Pence.
What about Giuliani or Christie for FBI?
Oh,
I saw that. I saw both of those.
Because to me, either of those would be a complete joke.
Giuliani was like at the Trump, whatever it is in D.C. just today, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Giuliani, to me, he doesn't make sense from a actually doing the job perspective, but from a what we know of Trump perspective,
right.
He makes perfect sense. He is a loyalist. He is a rabid loyalist.
He's become more and more rabid. He used to be a...
He's old yeller. He's an old yeller loyalist at this point. Yeah, he's gone in a very weird place, but he seems like the kind of dude Trump would appoint, and he also seems like the kind of guy who, if he's appointed, is going to sandblast this all elements of this investigation.
Sure, I totally agree. I just don't know. I think there will be a public backlash to that. I don't I don't know. I don't know if it will be enough, but
I don't. And this, I guess, is what I'm skeptical of. So we haven't even talked about, funnily enough, the French election. There was the data dump, right? Like right before the election, there was a bunch of information, hacked information that was released. Apparently bad information was mixed in with good information. And this was this weekend, right? I completely lost track of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have not talked about this.
So many lifetimes ago.
I know. It's unbelievable.
So on Friday night, there was a data dump. And with the French election, it's a little bit interesting that the election was on Sunday, but they're not allowed to campaign at all on Saturday. And so literally Friday night at 12 o'clock at night, from there on, they're not allowed to say anything. And this thing was dumped at something like, I don't remember, 10 o'clock at night. It was like right before the cutoff time where they could make comments. And Macron actually got in, I think, a lawsuit in that time or a threat of a lawsuit.
Released
or something
a statement at like 11:45 or something.
Yeah, right. And basically then I think, I don't know if it was the courts or whatever they said, basically the press was not supposed to release anything from this data dump, and they basically didn't. So the only access to this would have been through online sources.
French
and of course, people can go online. Right. French can read it, but probably not everybody. So I have no idea how many people actually searched it. But also, this sort of gets into an interesting idea of disinformation. So if you know as a candidate that you're going to be hacked, I see three ways to deal with it. One is be totally clean, but even being totally clean may not work because somebody could still put out.
They always find something.
Or they can make it up. Would you know? Yeah. And the other one is intersperse totally crazy stuff that people have no idea what's going on. So if I had regular conversations, if I was the campaign director with somebody and I start talking about, well, we're listening to the Martians and the Martians say we should do this. My astrologer says this, and I'll just put out like every third thing is going to be just totally crazy. And I'll say later, yeah, I did this just so that when we're hacked, people won't know, you know, truth from reality.
Yeah, they laid a trap.
That's some deep strategy, Scott.
No, but that's what happened. That's what happened.
They said that Macron did that. They said Macron did that.
I thought the bad information came from the hackers.
No, but there's also a theory that Macron was putting out disinformation.
Yeah, I think they were ready for people to do phishing attacks. They did some false leads, and they put in some garbage. Yeah. And I mean, kudos to the French.
The reason I mention that is because I agree with you. Kudos. There's a question there's that tension between our First Amendment, which allows freedom of speech, which includes bad speech, and the French, who are much more aggressive in terms of, and the French government said, look, if anyone reports on this stuff, because some of it may be false information, you will be prosecuted. But one of the things that people pointed out, I think the New York Times had this, was there's no Fox News in France. Like there was no organ to take this information and just spin it up against Macron and in favor of Le Pen. In the United States, we have that. And so for me, just sort of getting back to what we were talking about with Comey and whether or not there would be a public backlash, I see the conservative media as being extraordinarily good. I mean, we saw the Sinclair purchase means that, 60-70% of local broadcast networks are going to be controlled by this conservative-leaning organization, which was very pro-Trump at the end of 2016. I think they're very, very good at not just keeping people in line, but taking the fig leaf pretext and turning it into something that loyalists can stand behind and say, yeah, no, it wasn't partisan. They fired Comey for this reason that, you know, they gave in this letter. And so I don't know.
I think it amounts to this. I think that unless they really are suppressing votes and rigging the election in 2018, and I think there'll be some attempt to do some of that, but I don't think they can do it on this kind of scale or even would at this point. Unless there's some massive attempt to rig the election, a lot of Republicans are going to lose their seats. And that seems like the most likely. Yeah. And they know that. They know that, and it dissuades them. And some of them are in a bind where there's no good option for them. But I think they're going to step back from some of these things because they're going to say, I don't want to lose my seats. They're going to say, I can't do any good if I'm out of power.
So one of my questions when we were talking about looking out 1 year, or if I even want to go, let's say, more extreme and say by the, well, actually, I should just say 1 year, is will Trump be in power? And I think that this is not a black swan question. Basically, will there reach a point where they say, okay, going through impeachment is a problem. That's not good for a party. You don't want to do impeachment three months before an election. Is something going to continue to happen where they say it's better to jettison him? And I obviously we're not at that point, but it seems like there's more and more and more information coming out. If everybody, I mean, and in his case, I can literally say almost everybody in his inner circle is somehow connected to the Russia investigation. So what if he's the only guy that they can't finger? You know, what if it's like, okay, all of your advisors, everyone around you was all compromised, but you're the one standing. Does he survive that?
And the closer we get to 2018, the more they're going to be thinking like this. Like right now, they're trying to get their healthcare outrages out of the way. If they don't get it done, if it pushes over to next year and stuff looks like it's about to happen while the election's going on, there's going to be a lot of second thoughts, a lot more second thoughts.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if sort of like by the end of, I'd say like going into the fall, if they're still having problems going into the fall with him, then would that be the point where they would, you know, pull the trigger? I shouldn't say pull the trigger. I don't mean pull the trigger in their literal way.
So when you guys say they, though, who do you mean? Because we...
Republicans.
Yeah, but we like I don't know that the establishment has the power. Like the base is Trump's base. I thought that was a lesson of 2016.
Congress has the ability to do impeachment. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they have the ability that I don't think the base would go along with it. I think it's Trump's base, not their base.
I'm not so sure. So if the base is down to 30%, so if 30% of the country, but let's say that's 50% of the Republicans are still supporting whoever, but there's a really, really strong case to get him out. And he's making it easy for them. I mean, he's doing tons and tons of crazy stuff. And it's easy for a little while, I think, to try madman theory and say, yeah, he's being sneaky. He's trying, you know, whether it's on foreign policy or whatever, he's using his methods. But after a while, when that doesn't work and it doesn't work again and again and again, I think eventually people may get to the point of saying, this is not achieving our goals.
He's not making it easy for them to do anything. I mean, he's making it harder for them to pass health care, tax reform. Like, he's not, how are they going to do their AHCA bill when they have got to deal with this Comey scandal? Never mind, they've got to pass a budget by October. It's dragging the Senate down, dragging the Congress down.
Yeah, and if that continues, then that becomes the same thing as an impeachment, because during an impeachment, everything comes to a halt. But we're already nearly at that point.
The way I've been reading, I think just the news and also the behavior of these actors, I think that there is a real concern that the base is Trump's base and they don't want to alienate Trump's base. And it is surprising to me how many senators have fallen in line. Like, we tend to think of senators.
Oh, it is. I know.
But they have fallen in line. And it really, it's the only person, it's Lindsey Graham somewhat. It's John McCain, who increasingly is on his own island. Apart from that,
but you're not seeing that many full-throated defenses of Trump either. They're a little bit, this is peculiar. I'm troubled by this.
I'm troubled. How many times have we seen I'm troubled?
Right. That's not action right now, but I'm just saying they're not. They
that's
don't
want
to tie themselves to Trump too closely.
Chaffetz, who made the decision to not run again, I think is calling for, I don't know, it was a special prosecutor or what. I don't remember what she was calling for, but he seems to be getting further and further away from Trump. And I know that he's on his way out, but it's still one more person who can be vocal.
He may be on his way out because he doesn't want to go down.
Exactly.
That would be my guess as well.
I'm looking at Paddy Power. First of all, Paddy Power customers believe there's a 60% chance that Trump won't complete his first term at this point.
60%?
4 to 6.
That's high.
I know.
That's high.
Does seem high.
But look what's going on. And imagine this we're at 110 days and consider this for another, whatever, over 1,000 days. And you're talking about a person who I think has serious psychological problems. And I don't mean that part as a partisan. He has serious psychological problems. And how does that change in the next 1,000 days? It's not like he's going to say all of a sudden, oh, I'm sort of learning on the job. I'm going to calm down.
Sure.
I'm going to find a way to govern well.
No, it does. We can think of our constitutional system as an immune system, or it's an immune system, just sort of a body system that we're all participants in it. It's a framework in which we interact, and it's good, not good. It can get rid of stuff, right? But it's hard. It's a slow process. My concern, and we've talked about this repeatedly, but it has struck me, I think, most recently, particularly with Mitch McConnell's response, is that we're not seeing any kind of, well, I should say any kind of, we're seeing real efforts to suppress that kind of inflammatory response. Like, there are certainly people on the left who are saying this is a constitutional crisis. There are some people in the middle who are saying this is a constitutional crisis. On the right, I don't see that. In fact, what I see is the opposite. I see the right-wing media machine framing things in a way to pacify, and this all sounds very Orwellian, but to really get their people to fall in line, to get the base to fall in line.
Sure, and deny the elephant in the room.
Yeah, and if the base falls in line, I think it makes it much harder for senators and members of Congress to act. And it has surprised me to see, maybe not super surprising, to see how many people, when interviewed about Trump, how many Trump voters will say, give him a chance. You know, he's learning on the job, give him a chance.
He doesn't get an infinite chance.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay,
that runs
four
out.
Years? Like, it's to me,
at some point, they're like, why has nothing changed in my district? Where did my healthcare go?
Think about George H.W. Bush, who was in power for 4 years, had incredibly high ratings and lost an election because the economy went bad.
Some of these people voted for Obama 4 years ago. They're not necessarily... Oh,
some of them did.
Some of these are people who are going to blow with the wind a little bit. It only needs to happen at the margins to make a difference.
I agree.
But there's a difference between an election and an impeachment. So, will he...
But the future election is what motivates the impeachment.
I don't see any impeachment unless Trump starts to lose his base. And I don't know that we have any evidence that Trump is losing his base.
But how big are you calling his base?
I think it's the number of people who supported them. So we'll say supporters during the election versus supporters now.
I would call his primary voters would be his base in my mind. His base is probably going to be pretty hard to move.
Yeah, I don't know. But if we're just talking about 35% of the electorate, that's his base.
Yes.
If he loses that 8% more that he's got right now, that makes a difference.
So, I agree with you guys. I think there is, you're right, there's a core base, and then there's people who voted for him, which includes people who voted for Obama in the past. I mean the core base, but the core base in a national election level is one thing. The core base when it comes to members of the House and members in particular who are facing re-election and a third of the Senate, which is facing re-election in, a year and a half now, that core base matters to them. That core base determines whether or not they're going to be primaried. I don't think they break with Trump unless that core base breaks with Trump.
I think that core base, though, is the primary voters, because the primary voters had the choice of a lot of other people,
even if they were
a lot of weak candidates. And I don't remember his percentages in the primaries, but it wasn't much over 30-some percent in general, I thought.
I agree. I think there's a difference between...
Of Republicans, not of the country, but of Republicans.
There's a difference between how we would expect him to perform in a national election and how we would expect Republicans to perform in these local elections, in the House votes, and then these statewide Senate votes. Yes, everything we're looking at seems stark, but we've seen bad stuff for a while, stuff that we thought would take down 100 other guys. And at this pace, he's super loyal. And there are so many factors making him super loyal.
It hasn't even been 4 months. So I think if he keeps this up,
it's going
to erode it.
Maybe.
Hey, I see that Paddy Power has a market for who will replace James Comey as FBI director. FBI director.
Give me the numbers. Give me the people.
Names.
So the favorite is Trey Gowdy at 4-7.
Okay.
Andrew McCabe, who would be the acting FBI director, is 13-5.
And that would be the logical one if they wanted to be neutral, but I don't know that they want to be neutral.
No, because where did Andrew McCabe come from?
There's no idea.
Trump is going to care. Trump is like, is this someone who...
Will he swear fealty?
Yeah.
Exactly.
A lot of names I don't know. I'm not a big fantasy lawyer guy, but we got Rudy Giuliani at 20-1. Chris Christie at 50-1.
There's no chance.
And yeah. Chief Wiggum at 500-1.
Oh, wonderful.
And Noirin O'Sullivan at 500-1. I just looked her up. She is the current commissioner of the Irish Police Force. So I think I'll take a flyer on that one.
Yeah. I like Wiggum. McCabe, by the way, is WashU alum, Scott. So you guys do the secret handshake.
We've had FBI directors before from WashU, Webster.
Really? Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Atif, would you accept a special prosecutor position?
Yes.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Special counsel?
Special counsel?
Whatever. We keep saying it, yeah.
I think there's independent counsel and special prosecutor.
I think the independent counsel and special prosecutor statute, that same statute expired in the 90s, late 99.
But
I think
they could still pass another one. They could still require another one.
And we know what we're fucking talking about. Yes, if someone appointed me... I would be a bloodhound. I would be, not only that, my wife would understand. I would just go deep. I'd do a deep dive. I'd be like,
she'd understand if you disappeared for a year.
Yeah,
she'd understand.
Like a noir gumshoe. Like it would just be me, hard bitten. I would have a flask in one pocket and just a magnifying glass in the other.
Dude, you would have to drink.
I would. Yeah, of course. I would expect you as a mixologist to come up with an investigation cocktail. What would that cocktail be? What would the cocktail be that I drank as I'm going to investigation?
I don't know. We'd probably have to work on the name first.
How about between this week and next week, you come up with a cocktail I would drink as special counsel? All I'm telling you right now is I do like whiskey.
Well,
whiskey
sure.
Guy.
Yeah.
Although I like pear vodka too. I was telling my wife about that.
Pear vodka?
Pear vodka is actually really good. I don't know that you mix it with much, but it's actually very tasty. So between this week and next week, what do you guys think is going to happen? Do you think it will be a nominee
quiet.
For the FBI?
Just a very quiet.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a shocking chance that there's a new, fresher, bigger scandal a week from now.
Fucking unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
But I think we missed. There was no Taco Bowl tweet. I looked, I went through. There was no Cinco de Mayo tweet.
Oh, you're right.
Very disappointing.
Did we say there was going to be?
We thought there would be some kind of a tweet.
We thought there would be some sort of tweet.
I hope. That's wishful thinking. That would have been amazing. I think maybe we do that before a break. Just come up with some forecast what Trump's going to do for the next month. Because it could be literally anything. He could turn his attention back to Mars.
To always bring up the boring subject, next week I'd like to also spend a little bit of time talking about what are the effects of this on what should matter to regular people. So what's the effects of this on the economy? What's the effects of this on foreign policy, about basically just having a chaotic White House for the next, you know, foreseeable future?
No, I think that's great.
Because right now the economy seems to still be going along relatively strong. And is it able to function fairly independently of this? Because unlike us, most people still are managing to be able to, you know, get up, don't spend all night watching the news. You know, I don't know.
No, I think it's a good point. And, you know, one of the things, and this is, you know, Trump tried to claim credit for all this good economic news when it has nothing to do with him. At most, some of the stock market, maybe, but everything else, it's all Obama. Obama took a plane that was in a nosedive, leveled it off, served drinks, and then people started bitching about the drinks. But he saved the economy from crashing. But I think it's a really good point. Like, we know that there are lag effects, but we also know that the, you know, obviously the Fed has a big impact on the economy. We know we're at full employment, but we also know that Trump can do things that can be shock effects to the economy. If we get into a trade war with Canada, and I think there was...
pulls out of NAFTA or the healthcare reform, that could shake up a huge sector of the economy.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. But a lot of these things can be... I mean, a lot of Canada and Mexico give us raw materials, inputs for a lot of goods that we use, and they can increase the costs exceptionally. And we, you know, some of the stuff that, like lumber from Canada, is going to affect the cost of housing in the United States, stuff like that. So the things he does now can have long-term effects. And we saw, you know, with healthcare, this debate right now, a lot of insurers who are planning for the next year have been giving two sets of numbers. One, if things remain the same, and one, if there's a repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, and also, is he likely to fold on a lot of these financial things? Because it's already clear that there's a lot of areas where he is willing to fold, that Trump is willing to not stick to his campaign promises. And so it may be that even though, you know, with the whole Russia investigation, he's kind of crazy. There's other areas where I'd say he's kind of crazy. You know, even like I heard, I think it was today, that he's pushing off until June any announcement about the Paris Climate Accords. And, you know, so there are some areas where he doesn't seem over eager to wade in.
I want to say missed opportunity for Paddy Power. Kushner should have been on that list.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Do you think he has time while he's curing cancer?
Of course he does. He's a polymath, Robert.
He is.
He does. That's right. He sleeps like Leonardo da Vinci. Doesn't he sleep like 2 hours a day or something like that?
I think so.
I think so. Kushner could probably cut into his oboe and violin practicing, which is like 2 to 4 a.m.
I think this would also be 500 to 1, but what about Trump's sister?
Oh, actually, I thought about that. I think it's actually better than 500 to 1. Although, maybe he nominates her for the Supreme Court.
I thought she's relatively liberal, but maybe she wouldn't want to, you know, take down her brother, because that'd be bad.
Yes, I agree. I don't know how loyal she is either. I don't know how loyal the members of extended family are.
No idea.
We will come back next week, and it's anyone's guess what's going to happen between this week and next week. Something ludicrous is probably a safe bet.
Yeah, we didn't get to a black swan because our whole life has become a black swan now.
It's all black swans.
Yeah.
Yeah, the concept is obsolete. I'm not going to say I envy you and your island, Robert.
I mean, it's a nice place to go. It's a nice place to go.
Are you going to have less stress or more stress if you're out of the loop?
I'm usually able to get out of the loop and really enjoy it. But there's a part of me that keeps wanting to check. You know how it is. You know what's going on?
Yeah. You know what? I'm sorry. Before we go, because this, I meant to lead with this. Give me your foundation hot take.
Oh, I was just going to say, in the foundation series, I don't know how many of our listeners have read that.
All of them.
Isaac Asimov's, they're nerds. The foundation series, there are a group of people, psycho historians, who can broadly predict how history will go. There's enough people that can predict what's going to happen politically. They are essentially super, super forecasters. And they're what we wish we could be, essentially. But in the Foundation series, there's a character called the Mule, and the Mule has some kind of mutation that allows him to affect what other people think or feel and draw people to him in some kind of weird charismatic way. And this throws off all their calculations. They can't predict what's going on around the Mule. And to me, Trump is the Mule. Trump has this sort of mutant ability to bend people into doing unpredictable, bizarre things. And it's gotten to the point, like, I don't I honestly feel like it is just harder to predict American politics because it's not as regular as it used to be. Things which were off the table could genuinely happen now.
Yes. And again, this is what happens when bureaucracy breaks down. Like the whole point of bureaucracy, which we say it's a bad thing, but it's really not a bad thing because it
can
essentially
be in excess like anything else.
No, that's right.
The optics of today were totally insane. And by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be old news. But you had Lavrov, so the foreign minister of Russia,
yes,
at the White House with Kislyak, with the Russian ambassador. Yeah. And the other meeting was Kissinger.
Yep.
And then you had the Nixon. And I have to get this in. The Nixon library was upset that they were making comparisons to what Nixon did. So like when the Nixon library is saying, Nixon never fired the FBI
don't
director.
Drag Nixon
he never
into
went
this.
That far. Don't sully his reputation.
With Lavrov and Kislyak, first of all, someone asked Lavrov about the Comey firing, which he like responded to with some sneering joke.
Yeah. He said, what? He's fired?
But then they only allowed the Russian press and the Russian photographers into the Oval Office. I don't even know if Russian photographers are supposed to ever be in the Oval Office. Like, seems like a security concern. But like TASS was in there, but CNN wasn't.
There is history for this. My friend of mine was in the Oval Office photographing for the Romanian president. So it has happened before.
Is your friend a spy?
He's Romanian. He's Romanian, photographing the Romanian. I would assume so. I would assume he's a spy.
You know, when I was I briefly interned in the Foreign Service, and one of the few things they told us was basically, you should assume that Albanians and Bulgarians are spies.
Really?
If they're trying to talk to you, they want information.
You should assume everybody is.
Probably,
and that's,
you should.
I think seriously, that would be the safest way.
If a really hot woman wants to date you and she's from Bulgaria, it is not about you. That's what they were telling us. Do not date the hot Bulgarian woman. It is a honey trap.
I went to, so there's a chapter of a book about me. So a guy,
of course there
is. This is crazy. I got to give a plug because this is too crazy. I got a call that there's this guy named Shakespeare who's writing a book.
What?
And I'm not kidding. I know. And I have a degree in Shakespeare, but he actually spelled it without the E on the end. And so Nigel Shakespeare wrote a book about
Nigel
Romania.
Shakespeare.
And he's a former Gurkha. I mean, it's like a totally
crazy thing. I feel
like
you haven't even thought this one through in advance. Are you just totally winging it?
He's just bullshitting.
Yeah. It's called Times New Romanian. You can look it up. Times New Romanian.
I sure will.
Yeah, and he's a Gurkha. It's totally true.
Yep.
And his book launch, he did his book launching in Bucharest, and it was full of honeypots. And it's like, none of us would normally be getting these people, and they're all around. They're like, oh, nice to see you. And it's like, oh, come on. They're all from Estonia. They were all from Estonia.
Why don't I get involved in the honeypot parts? Wait, can I ask why the spies all wanted to be at the book launch that's about you?
It was full of expats. So the whole book was about interviews of expats. So it's basically a gathering of all the Brits, Americans, whatever, all the people that would be their targets.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then I was just ancillary.
So you're a valuable target in Romania.
I think by now some of the people have realized I'm not. You know, that's the sad part.
What is in the chapter that's about you?
Lies. All lies.
I'm gonna buy this book.
Obviously there are plenty of reasons, but why would someone write a chapter about you?
Because they had nobody else to write about. No, it was actually sad because they wanted to know basically the perspective of somebody, I think, not living in the capital. Most people have been living in the capital, how I got there, what I was doing, whatever. So I'd done some sort of interesting things with photographing around the country. But the thing that was bad is the best stories were things I can't say because they could always relate back to somebody that people would figure out who I was talking about.
Right.
And so unfortunately, it's going to be boring.
I would just like to say, if you ever get in trouble, Scott, and you need to reach one of us, just call Collect with Nigel Shakespeare.
That's right.
Nigel Shakespeare. Yeah,
that's right.
Can I ask you a question, Scott? Do you have a bunch, like a stack of passports from different countries and different names?
Almost certainly.
I do have a stack of passports, but I try to keep them under the same name.
Yeah. I want to read this book. Yeah. I want to read this book now. And I will never forget the author's name, Nigel Shakespeare.
He's great.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back next week. It's who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But we'll be here to talk about it. All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.